Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
All right, heading into our next interview, just another couple people that I admire a ton in the way that they continue to educate themselves, but also make education easily accessible and easily understandable to everybody. We have Sohee Lee and Ben Carpenter, great friends of ours. Sohee, again, these two both have an array of experience and education in the health and fitness space. Sohee got her bachelor's in human biology from Stanford, then went on to get her master's from psychology from Arizona State, and is currently working on her PhD in sports science. She also has her CSCS, or Certified Strength and Conditioning Specialist, and Certified Sports Nutritionist certificates. She has all sorts of online programs, ebooks. You're going to want to check her out at SoheeFit.com or @SoheeFit on Instagram. Ben Carpenter, on the other hand, has been a personal trainer for 15 years. He knows the industry a ton. He is now an international speaker and writer and has been featured across numerous publications, including Muscle and Fitness Hers, Bodybuilding.com, DailyMail.co.uk, and Insider.com. But again, like I said, these two, we just really respect and admire for the education they get out. I would check both of them out at SoheeFit and at BDC Carpenter, because if you look at their Instagram pages for just 2 seconds, you'll start to realize how they start to really tear down fitness myths, tear down nutrition myths, and really deliver the good education that helps you impact your body. So listen in. All right, Ben and Sohee, we're super excited to have you on, to be able to interview you finally. We love all the education you guys put out and learn so much from you, educating in a space that can be pretty tough about nutrition, about eating habits, about behavior. So thanks for so much for being here and being on.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
It was a long commute.
Yeah, to walk upstairs.
30, maybe even 40 seconds. Everything that happens.
I know. Well, really, what I really appreciate about you two is the content in the which you guys put it out, because you're both in the health and wellness space and you've both been there for a really long time. Seems like, at least. I know you mentioned 9 years. Mm-hmm. Ben, how long have you been there?
15.
15 years.
I know, I'm that old.
You must be older than you look then.
Yes, I'm actually 60.
That's actually my compliment to your boyish good looks.
I'm actually 62.
Wow, it's much more severe than I thought.
But what you guys do well is breaking down the myths that are so common in the fitness industry. And you guys do it in a way that promotes your own vulnerability and allowing people to see what's real, what's the truth here, and continuing to do the work in terms of the research and the studies. And like, Sohee, I know you're still going to school, which is insane right now. But, you know, I appreciate what you guys do. So first of all, I just want to say that, and I hope that people really are able to take this in. Now, what even got you interested in continuing to learn, to dive into research, to really continue to study health and wellness for each of you?
Well, I think in the beginning, like a lot of people, you start off by relying on other experts in the industry. And this is back when I was doing fitness more as a hobby. I was kind of perusing fitness blogs while I was supposed to be listening to lectures as an undergrad, things like that. And I'd be like, oh, well, so-and-so said this, and so-and-so said this. And then as the years went by and I started to learn more, I would realize, look back and be like, oh shit, this person was wrong. And I just blindly believed them. I didn't like that. And so then I started looking at people who were talking about the research, people with maybe more, slightly more academic backgrounds, and they would say, oh, well, we, based on this research, here's what we can conclude. And I really admired that about them, the very intellectually honest side. And I decided that I wanted to be able to do that on my own. I wanted to have the confidence to read a research paper, interpret it, and come to my own conclusions instead of relying on other people's conclusions all the time. Or, you know, there are obviously also a chance that they'd be saying stuff that wasn't sound based on actual evidence. So that's when I went back to get my master's degree and ended up being in psychology, because a big part of that was wanting to be able to read research on my own. So now, obviously, a lot of what we both do is kind of translating the research, I guess, into the public in a way that is very digestible, because I feel like I think a lot of research papers and so on can come across very intimidating. Mm-hmm. And if you're too focused on trying to sound smart, for example, you're going to lose most of your audience because they're just trying to understand you. And so I was like, okay, this just has to be, how can I be impactful? The best way to be impactful is to be relatable, bring things down to more layman's terms. And especially if it's funny, if you can make it funny, even better, because they'll remember it. So that's what I do a lot of lately.
I think I started in the industry. I think a lot of people in the fitness industry got into it because they loved fitness. Mm-hmm. Like people on the, my personal training course, 15 years or whatever it was ago, everyone loved the gym. So they decided to become a personal trainer. And I was one of those kind of hardcore, trying to build muscle, young teenagers. And I think it took me a while to realize that a lot of what I was doing didn't matter. If you get into training and you're kind of, you've got that very hardcore focus mindset already, it's very easy to think, oh, this works for me because I have the results to prove it. But then realizing that a lot of what I was doing either didn't matter or didn't actually matter that much. And I was putting maybe a disproportionate amount of effort into things that I probably shouldn't be getting clients to do. And I think part of my kind of impetus for researching was to try and make sure that I was promoting whatever the client needed and trying to meet them on their level, rather than being like, here's a laundry list of things you need to do to get results and hoping they'll stick with it. But like, this one probably doesn't matter that much. This one's really important. This one probably doesn't matter that much. And kind of giving them the choice of picking and choosing what they think they can stick with.
I feel like we as providers love to use that confirmation bias of our own, where it's just like, oh, I did this and I saw these amazing results and now I'm going to do it for everybody. Or early and young providers, as soon as they get out of school or out of a course or out of a certification, they're all obsessed with that. And it captures a good percentage of the population. And they're saying, oh, it fixes everything for everybody. But in reality, as you guys know, when we dig deeper into the physiology, sometimes we generally just hit all these systematic base level things that make us feel better. And I love, again, that you guys really dig into the research and that's what you're passionate about, and getting that out to the people in a way that's digestible. Because as you know, when we look, like, research studies love to say really forward facing things like, oh, fat's bad, or sugar's addictive, or look at all this. But when you dig into the methods of research, you really can easily say, hey, that's BS looking at this. And I love how you guys deliver that.
Especially like mainstream journalism, for example, they'll just, you know, they're just looking for the catchy headlines and they just want a soundbite summary. I'm like, well, that's not actually what the research says, because if you actually read the methods, these are all the limitations. They didn't control for calories. They didn't control for protein. Like, these things are big and they don't, either don't know or don't care about mentioning those details.
That headline thing reminds me of an interesting study I read years ago. And it was, the research paper was called something like, are all foods associated with cancer? And they did like a systematic review and tried to see all the foods that had any research linking it in some way. So not like it cures or, or it will, be a high risk factor. It's just, is there any research supporting any kind of link? And one of the things it noticed is in the research studies, it said if there was a link there, it was the studies that had that link in the abstract were more likely to get published. And the abstract often had a slightly maybe more skewed representation of what the study said. So if people read the abstract, they might have a slightly warped view of how strong the relationship was. And let's say there's a study that shows an association somewhere, this food is healthy, and then by the time it gets down to the media, it's like, this is a superfood, or this cures this, or
it's
this
kind of like the, what is it called? You know, the whispering game?
Telephone.
Yes, yeah, I'm like, how can I think of the word?
It's passed down and transmitted so many different ways. That's a huge one, and I think that is really what needs to be addressed a lot more, but it's hard. In social media, when you do look up to someone who has credentials behind their name and they're saying this is fact, right? And so then it becomes, well, who do I trust now? Because I don't want to be the one doing the research. Many people don't, right? They want to just look at someone, follow someone, and trust what they're saying is true. So how does someone even start to navigate that? Like, do you have recommendations?
I think it's a really difficult one, because ultimately I think the best comparison is that if you remove fitness from it, because people who are listening to this or watching this will have some knowledge on that already. But there's a topic that everyone is naive enough on that if someone spoke to them with a convincing level of authority, they would buy it. Mm-hmm. So if I went to a garage or garage and someone was fixing my car and they said, this is what's wrong with it, I don't have enough knowledge to know what they're saying.
Yeah.
So there is a kind of certain amount of blind faith that you have to put in. And if you hear two people saying, well, what he's saying is incorrect or what she's saying is incorrect, it's difficult. And I don't think it's actually, I don't think there's a really guaranteed way to stop people knowing or being able to fact check things themselves, especially mm-hmm. on very mm-hmm. complicated topics. Generally speaking, I think something that is good is normally people who read scientific literature don't mind if they're questioned. So if someone said, well, what about this? Normally they're quite open to discussing. So I would say it's a red flag if you don't see that open dialogue. And I think it can sometimes be a red flag if they don't ever appear like they're discussing research or they're not at least giving rationale for their decisions. Because if someone gives rationale, you can at least listen and say, but I disagree. And it, you know, it's often not as black and white. And you need to be able to discuss that gray, I think.
Yeah. And I think just being able to be open-minded and say, especially if you're selling a product, I know, or a service, which nothing wrong with wanting to make money off your business, obviously, but sometimes I feel like some people get too married to whatever it is that they're selling that they try to make it seem like their way is the only way.
Yeah.
And I think when you see that closed-mindedness, to me, that's a red flag because there is a financial motive behind that. Mm-hmm. And if they're, you can see the confirmation bias happening, as we mentioned, and if they're being overly defensive, right, and not willing to entertain any other viewpoints, then I would know, okay, maybe not this person, especially if it's an area that I know that I'm not very confident in, certain topics, which is a lot, right? Then I wouldn't know for sure who I can actually trust. But I like seeing when people discuss the nuances of, or like back pain, for example, where I'm like, I'm not an expert in that, but someone else might be. Then I might be more inclined to be like, hey, this is a person that I think I can trust.
Yeah. I think there's always going to be a bit of blind faith, like say people that are following you for pain science. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to understand pain science research. I'm not an expert of pain science. So there will be a certain amount of blind faith when I'm listening to what you put out, thinking, oh, it at least sounds convincing. But I don't think it's very easy for people to say, that's definitely correct or that's not. Just maybe being open-minded enough to see if someone is giving a different opinion. I think sometimes being exposed to different opinions can be helpful.
Totally. I really do agree. And I just say too, like, well, are you following someone just because of the way they look and you're trying to achieve that?
Yeah.
And I think like, especially in the fitness industry, because that's originally why clients came to me. Like I had quite a lot of young guys that, I remember one guy literally knocked on the glass door in the office and said, I want personal training because I want to look like you. Mm-hmm. I was like, in all of my years as a personal trainer, I had that quite a lot. And I think I only ever had one person ask what my qualifications were or what I studied. And the only reason they did that was small talk. It was just like, oh, so, you know, what did you do?
Just being training? Polite. I don't really care.
Yeah, it wasn't, it was never a criteria. It was, this guy looks good and I want to look like him, so I'm going to hire him. But it doesn't mean that what I was doing would work. And it doesn't mean that other things could have maybe provided better results. Some of the things I was doing might not have had any benefit at all. But overall, it looked like I knew what I was doing. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the tricky aspects of being in any industry, but especially in the fitness industry, it is so focused on how you look. And people who are more, you know, conventionally, I put this in heavy quotes, attractive and have the more conventionally, quotes, acceptable physiques and bodies are going to attract more followers, customers, business and everything. So to some degree, if you want to make an impact, and I hate this, you have to kind of play the game a little bit. So over the years, even I've noticed I've started to care more about my outfits more. I don't wear as much black or gray. It's more like white and bright colors and things like that. Whereas before, I would have thought, well, my information's good enough and I can attract people that way. Not really. You can only do so much. And so, as much as I hate it, it does matter to a degree.
But I think this is why it's difficult to dispel if someone knows what they're doing or not, because there is a natural kind of gravitas towards judging a book by their cover. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know enough about pain science to understand what you're saying, But I would look at the stuff that you do and think, it looks like they know what they're talking about because you're a product of that. And yeah, in the fitness industry, I think it's natural to gravitate towards someone that at least looks like they're kind of walking the walk.
Mm-hmm.
You have that saying in America,
yep,
right?
Walk the walk.
Yeah, walking the walk, not just talking the talk.
Yeah, I think that's super important and kind of what we're steering into is like, what sells and what makes people believe that you have that expertise? Because I know plenty of people that have less than 500 followers that are in the world of physical therapy specifically, because they're a bunch of my professors or friends that are like some of the smartest people I know and put out information that would absolutely add to any physical therapist's tool belt. But they're not being seen because you look at their profile and they're just like boring and it's like next, right?
Yeah.
And then you get to the one that has like a million followers and they got the peach Insta booty and they got right. everything. And you're like, I need the program they're selling. So again, it gives us that bias that we need to do a certain thing to look a certain way. And the difficult thing where we started with the research is that a lot of people don't ever want to or don't ever feel the need to dig in a way that's going to help them functionally understand it in a way that applies to their life. And kind of where I want to steer the conversation, because we like to get a little vulnerable, is steering into maybe your journey and something that has steered a little bit of your guys' education and why you've wanted to learn so much about certain areas. Because I know that that came a little bit in for me, especially when it came to nutrition and how I exercised and moved my body. I've changed that a ton based on previous beliefs I had and things that I've learned since.
Do you want to go?
Sure. Well, a lot of, and I just did a post on this on my social media platform, actually was from my own personal experience and my own personal frustrations and all the mistakes that I made at the beginning of my fitness journey. And even probably a few years ago, I was still falling for a few myths out there because I was kind of just blindly relying on other authority figures. And they're like, you know, first they're like, oh, cardio is amazing. And then the next day they're like, okay, cardio is great, but only these specific forms and definitely not the elliptical because of this, and eat six small meals a day and do this and do that. And it was a lot of anguish. And I feel like in many ways, it's a huge pain point for me because looking back, and I'm like, I missed out on so much of my college years because I was led to believe that I had to be really strict, be on a meal plan, eat only quote unquote clean foods, and which led me to missing out on all the social engagements because I was like, well, I don't know how to eat when I'm not following my meal plan. Just missed out on so many opportunities in that aspect. And it's very kind of hard to think back on and be like, man, I could have had a much more fun experience during those years, had way more friends, but I became a hermit. I was isolated because at the time I thought, oh, this is what it takes to be healthy. But what I was forgetting was my mental health was terrible and my quality of life went to shit because I was never thinking about those things. I was only thinking, oh, well, so-and-so said, this is how I need to eat and this is how I need to exercise to be at optimal health. Once again, not realizing I was actually shooting myself in the foot and making things way more difficult than they needed to be. And I didn't understand that it wasn't just about blindly trying harder, because I'd always think, oh, I just need more self-control. And that's something I talk about a lot now, is that is a huge myth. That's not what it is. You don't need more self-control necessarily. You just need the right tools and the right, you know, methods and so on. And so I was so frustrated. I wasted so much time, so much money hiring different coaches, buying like supplements that I didn't need, all this stuff. And so when I started to learn more about the research on my own, I started to become, I guess, more and more open-minded is the word I would use over time, where I'm very much, oh, this is very context dependent. And whatever method I use is going to differ from one person to the next. So I guess that's where most of my motivation comes from.
I think for me, there's some interesting research that shows that rates of eating disorders in the fitness industry appear to be disproportionately high. And I think,
and dietitians too, 50% are at risk of eating disorders.
And I think that a lot of people get into the fitness industry because there's a kind of question whether, say, like bodybuilding culture and very extreme aesthetic fitness culture exacerbates that in people, or whether those people gravitate towards the fitness industry because of existing psychology. And I think that that was probably one of the things that impacted me, because I think that's why I gravitated towards the fitness industry, because I had a kind of obsessive compulsive way, very perfectionist about what I did. So when I started training, my nutrition and training, everything was very, very perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted everything to be great. So I became very, very ruthless with what I ate. If there was something that I was like, that's not good for me, I didn't touch it at all. It wasn't a, I don't mind eating that rarely or a little bit. It was very, very black and white, very, very strict. And I realized after a few years that I had got into a really bad mental space. So similar to Sohi's story, my social life fell apart. I didn't go out and socialize with people because I was worried about what they were eating, whether I could blend in with that if they were going out. If my friends were going out for pizza and beers, in my head, I was like, I can't do that. I'm not allowed that because it's not conducive to my fitness regime. And I realized it all kind of came to a crescendo in my head when a few of my friends were going on, I say a lad's holiday, but like a bachelor party. And I was the best man and I was anxious to go. And I was like, I'm scared of going on holiday with some of my best friends because I'm worried about alcohol and the food and stuff like that. And I went there and I had literally one of the best weeks of my life. And I realized that I had become so focused on everything being perfect from like a fitness perspective that I had completely ruined my social life balance with that. Yeah. And that was a huge wake-up call for me because a lot of clients don't have that same mindset that a lot of hardcore fitness trainers do. So rather than being like, here's a list of things that you can do and here's a really long list of things that you can't, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't making people put an unnecessary amount of effort into things that didn't matter so much. So rather than being like, you have to eat this or you can't eat this, it was like, it might not make much difference, or that's a really good one to focus on. But trying to get people like almost like maximum results for minimal effort, because I think a lot of people in the fitness industry is very maximal effort. Here's a list of things you must do straight away. And fitness culture kind of has this, it's a really big effort. People jump on the fitness bandwagon. If they can't keep up with it, they fall off the fitness bandwagon rather than just trying to be a bit better at something.
It's the no days off mentality where you feel like, I mean, think about crash diets when people love bragging about how hardcore and strict their diet is, but then ask them 2 weeks later and they're obviously not following anymore. But I've had so many clients push back and be like, wait, this isn't extreme enough for me. I don't even want to try.
Yeah, it's the, almost like the belief that fitness has to be extreme. Yeah. Like weight loss has to be extreme.
And or everything it's not worth is doing very, otherwise.
Here's the amount of pounds that someone could lose in a month. It's very heavily marketed towards getting results now. And that comes with a very, very high cost.
Yeah.
And I realized that I was promoting an unnecessarily high cost. So
people love extremes.
They really do. And it's hard. I mean, even when I wrote my program for Oxygen, I think they're used to coaches who are so strict with everything. And I don't count macros and I don't believe
they're
in
probably like,
counting.
Give us a meal plan.
Yeah.
Give us a,
and I was like, oh, I gave you amazing recipes and options of how you can change them up and everything that you can do that can add to what you're doing. And you know, if you add enough good things, you might not want some of the other stuff. But I don't believe in this like strict regimen. And I was met with so much resistance.
Interesting.
In that.
That Oxygen magazine was how I started lifting weights, actually. Was I saw one, I forget who was on the cover, but I saw obviously a woman on the cover and I was like, wait, how does she look muscular and lean? And but she's not a professional at, I want to look like that. And that's, this was in January of 2008, so it's coming up on 13 years now. I started lifting weights, but you know, I had been, which I forgot to mention before, as a teen, I was anorexic, I was bulimic because I took the eat less, move more advice way too literally. And I was like, okay, well, if I eat nothing and do nonstop exercise, that's even better. So I was doing 3 hours of cardio a day. I was eating zero calories for days at a time and then binging every second or third day. So it was bulimia and, you know, anorexia for a long time. And then when I knew nothing about nutrition, not even like, what is a calorie? What is a protein? Look at this food. What macronutrients is it? Like, I didn't know if butter was a carb. I legitimately didn't know. And when I saw that girl, that movie Mean Girls, when they made that joke, I was like, I didn't get why it was funny. Because to me, it was not obvious, is butter a carb? I was like, is it? I don't know.
What was the joke?
Is butter a carb?
Oh, okay.
Their joke is she's so clueless she doesn't even know. Oh, okay. But I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And so it just came to me, it was like, okay, well, just the difference between like rice versus lettuce calorically, I didn't know the difference. So I was like, okay, just eat nothing. Then that's for a while, it was years of me thinking, oh, I'm just not trying hard enough. And then when I was 18, started lifting weights, started learning about clean eating, quote unquote, macronutrients. And I became obsessed with that. So even though I was eating more now and not afraid to eat in a sense, as long as it fits certain categories, I basically swapped out one eating disorder or two for orthorexia, which obviously is another more well-disguised, I guess, less obvious form of disordered eating. But I became, you know, unhealthily obsessed with eating healthy, quote unquote. And it was so ironic. And I didn't see it for so long.
I think like what you said about the magazine is like if they want a certain angle with their story, I think that's a lot of fitness media is they essentially get money by having people buy the magazine.
Well, it wasn't even, I don't want to like, it wasn't Oxygen themselves. Like everyone who I worked with and they were all great. It was the women who are used to buying all these programs and they're used to being told strictly every single thing. So they're doing the most for 90 days and they're used to that hefty of a program where I come in and I'm just trying to get people to feel different, move different, do some different core mobility, things that they've never done in their bodies before. And here are some, if you're going to make me do nutrition, which I'm not a nutritionist or a dietitian, I'm going to have Dom write the recipes and say, here's what you can add in that can fit for everyone. But I don't count, like it wasn't something that I was going to do, but because they're so used to doing the most, when I bring them something that's not doing the most, they didn't know what to do with it.
I feel like that's just how mainstream general public tends to be, where even when I first started out with my career, I was swung different ways too. And obviously I'm much more in the middle now. But when I first said, I want to talk about the importance of moderation and the gray area and mindset and psychology and behavior change, I got so much pushback from even other colleagues saying, oh, just so you know, no one cares about that stuff. No one cares about moderation. You're never going to gain a following talking about moderation. You're not going to be cool. Psychology isn't cool to talk about. It's not even a real science. I got told that several times. But I was like, you know, but I get that. And I get that, you know, the extremes are easy. Mindset is like, oh, it's a lot more alluring. It's a lot more attractive. But maybe I can make moderation cool. And maybe if I talk more about it, people will start to come around and realize it's actually, they get fed up of their ways. And then they start listening to me finally. So I'm glad that I kept it up. But for sure, so much pushback. They don't want to see the easier route, the effortless, like, you know, remove as much resistance as possible. They don't want that. It's like they want things to feel hard.
Mm-hmm. I feel like for years and years, like a lot of, say, magazines or articles or whatever, people are trying to grab your attention. It's like magpies like something shiny, and I think human nature is similar. Mm-hmm. So I think if there are two articles, yeah, and one was like, here are some good mobility exercises, and then the other one was like, here's the best mobility exercise in the world, if you do this you will be able to X, Y, Z and hype it up, people click on that one. Yeah. So if you come along and be like, oh, here's my, I think these are really good things, people are like, no, you need to jazz that up, because mm-hmm. they're used to seeing the super sexy hyped up stuff.
Yep.
And I've always said that it's easier to overhype something and sell someone into it than come in with relatively boring fundamentals. Yep. And I think because of that, because people are surrounded so much with things that are marketed as, you know, quick fixes and extreme results, when someone comes in with a more kind of moderation approach, it is almost like a kind of pendulum of a reaction where people don't quite know what to do with it. And I think, like, if we come along, for example, and say, actually, you probably don't need to do that in the nutrition realm, it gets quite a lot of backlash, because people for so long, like, I thought you had to avoid that food completely. I thought you had to avoid that food completely.
And especially when people have invested a lot of money into something, for example, they don't like being told that they didn't have to do that. So then they will hold on. And this is a very common psychological flaw, where sometimes just providing information to try to change their minds actually has the opposite effect, where then they will double down even more on what they believe. I find that so, I mean, it's frustrating, but that's...
But mine was kind of the same thing, was I realized I was doing a lot of stuff that I just didn't think mattered. And it wasn't until I got to a certain point in my head that I almost had I don't mean this spiritually, but I almost had that kind of out of body experience where I looked at myself and just thought, what are you doing? What are you doing?
And
I was like, I'm doing so much stuff that was so overly strict. And it was almost like, if everyone in the fitness industry is in this huge bubble, I represented a tiny, tiny, tiny subset of super hardcore bodybuilders that were like, here's the five foods I eat every day and I never deviate from that.
Yeah.
And I realized that most people don't want to do that. They want to have easier options. They want to make dietary adherence easier. They don't want something super strict that they can only do for 2 weeks and then, you know, fall off the bandwagon. So,
I think it is hard to get that kind of message across, to get the message of open-mindedness and flexibility and moderation and so on. But for me, it's always been about playing the long game with my career, with my message. So for me, it's been about, okay, if I repeat the same sort of message year after year after year after year, and people can see that, again, that I also walk the walk, that I actually can eat carbs and feel fine, all these things, then maybe they'll slowly start to come around. And even people who end up signing up to be a client of mine or they buy my products, I always like asking, how did you hear about me? Why do you want to work with me? And it's usually, oh, I've been following you for 8 months or this many years before mm-hmm. they bite the bullet. And I'm like, that's very helpful to know, because it just takes time for them to start to really buy into what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a slow process.
And I love how we're kind of steering into behavior change in general, and how just this process of behavior change and learning as a human how to change our behavior in a way that changes the way we feel or changes our own health outcomes, that gives us a lot of power. And I think what we're talking about in what sells, or like the article that's going to sell, is like, if you market the best thing that's going to cure all your problems, like, yes, that's going to sell, but it's a very manipulative tactic, and manipulation doesn't last. It's when you build loyalty by teaching people the stuff that's boring, that gives them the, oh, it depends answer. Well, it depends if you are this type of person or this type of person, then we might take this route. That takes work, and people don't like that. But once it builds the loyalty, they'll see and they'll keep coming back. And that's how within a very manipulative marketplace, you can still find the people that are like, I'm sick of that. I have spent a lot of money on that. Whatever, I'll admit it. Now, how do I actually start to address the behavior change? So how do you recommend to people, like, this is where you can start. This is where you can start to look at what you're doing. How do I do it different?
I think my strategy is to keep things as non-judgmental and open and welcoming as possible. I see a lot of people using more shaming tactics, or they make you feel dumb for, oh, how could you be so stupid to fall for that, whatever, XYZ thing. And you have to be doing it things my way or else you're missing out big time. And I think over time I've taken a lot more of a, let's keep things light and fun. And even if you made this mistake, no big deal. We're learning. This is the right, you know, here's the actual right information, et cetera. That way they feel less intimidated and more willing. At least this is, I don't know how effective it is. I'm hoping it is effective. This is my way of getting people on board, is let me show you the way. No worries if you've fallen for every myth out there. I have made that mistake too, building that relatedness, right? Like, these are all the mistakes that I made in the past, but here's where I am now, giving them hope that things can get better, fostering growth mindset over fixed mindset, mm-hmm. you know? You never stop learning, always learn from your mistakes and so on. And so far, that's been working really well. And I see a lot of people coming to me who say, I feel really connected to you, watching your stories, watching your Instagram, even though I've never talked to you in my life. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'll say it's a very non-sexy answer, so probably isn't going to sell you any clients.
We'll not apologize for that.
But again,
they need to follow you for a while.
Probably means that it's one that could be effective. But no, I appreciate that answer.
I think it's good, like, for me to give people something actionable they can do now.
Yeah.
So rather than presenting them with the like super extreme thing that they have to do, like, you can do that if you want, but alternatively you can do this, and kind of start from the bottom up. So a lot of, like, say fitness programs is like, lose 30 pounds in a month with this secret. It's like, we're not going to do that, but how about, can you do this amount of exercise? If you can do that, start mm-hmm. there. If you're happy with it and things are going well, it's a lot easier to build on it rather than throwing them at the deep end and worrying if they're going to kind of sink or swim. It's more like dipping your toe in, and if they feel more confident, they can kind of walk deeper in the pool, I guess.
Yeah. And that's about building, what I learned, this term, building success momentum, which I love, because it's all about stringing together the wins, no matter how small they are, every day. Because it's more about being consistent in that way rather than how big is the behavior change that you're trying to implement. Because what's going to happen if you are successfully implementing, executing a given target behavior every day, you check it off on your chart every day, you see the check marks, that builds confidence, that builds self-efficacy, and it gives you more confidence to keep going and eventually take on bigger and bigger and bigger changes. And that's the thing that's hard to get out there, is this is the way to go, not drastic changes that you can barely sustain for longer than a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think those are such good points, that just taking people back to, what can I start with right now? How can I start small? And how can I what does it feel like? Like actually asking yourself that question, does this feel good for me? Do I need to change it? Like you don't have to stick to one way, and that allowance too of like, hey, it's okay. Didn't work for you. Cool. What can we switch? And like giving people that ability. And I do want to ask Ben, you know, you were so strict, right? In your eating and your working out and everything that you did. When did you notice, or how long have you been diagnosed with Crohn's, first of all?
I was diagnosed, I think, when I was either 20 or 21. It was kind of a blurry time because symptom-wise, it went on for months. I can't remember when I was exactly diagnosed. It was, say, 12 or 13 years ago now.
And what happened? Like what? Because by this point, you're already eating well and working out and everything.
Yeah. So my mum has it, and she's had it as long as I've been alive. So I kind of grew up knowing that. And I had like stomach pains for a long time, weeks and months. And I always describe myself as someone who didn't have the best digestive system. Never diagnosed with something. I was just like, I feel like I have a sensitive stomach, that type of thing. And over the course of a few weeks or months, it got to the point where I wasn't able to eat very much. I was feeling really nauseous. I was going to the toilet too much. And because I wasn't eating much and I was losing weight, like a lot of weight really quickly, I felt really lightheaded and exhausted. I remember I had to scale back my clients so I didn't see two back to back, because I would see one and I'd have to go upstairs and lie down because I was so tired just from standing there. I wasn't training alongside them. Absolutely exhausted. And I went to the doctors many times and they never diagnosed me. And then I went in with my mum. And at this point, like I couldn't walk on my own. It was like I had to have my arm around someone, or I even had to have a pair of crutches because I was so weak. I think I'd lost 50 pounds, went down to 132 pounds. And I went to the doctor and he looked at me and said, just take him to hospital. Wow. And when my mum looked at him, we were kind of a bit confused. He actually said the words, look at him, like that. He didn't do any tests. He just was like, look at him. He has to go to hospital. So I went straight to hospital. I was in there for 6 nights where I had very, you know, fun tests, like cameras in both ends type thing. And then was diagnosed there, and it was a very long recovery period out of it. So I had a lot of joint pain and weakness and exhaustion and kind of medication side effects, like kind of face bloating and stuff like that. And I think it probably took me close to a year before I could even get back to work. And part of that was because I felt like because I worked in the fitness industry, I had to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I felt my confidence had been shaken so much with how I was health-wise that I just didn't feel like I could go into a gym and anyone would take me seriously. Like this guy that's still kind of limping, super frail, can't bend over and get something from the floor because he's got so much back pain. Why would I hire him as a trainer? So it took me about a year to get back into work. And then I got back into work in a different gym because I couldn't go back to my old one. Felt strange going from like the personal training manager to starting again. I went to another gym and worked there for 9 months, and then the same thing happened again. Same amount of weight loss, same kind of symptoms. It was just they knew what it was this time. So yeah, that was like super, super fun.
Oh my goodness.
So can you dig into that a little more and explain just what Crohn's is exactly, kind of what was happening in your body and then the recovery from that? And I know like since then you've done other things as far as medication goes that have made you feel significantly better. So can you kind of share a little into
that? Yeah, so it's a class of inflammatory bowel disease, or like an autoimmune disease. And the simplified version is my immune system overworks or attacks itself, is like the super simple version. And without kind of getting into the gruesome detail, when I had a camera inside me to see how my digestive system looked, I would say the photo looked like it had been bombed, like a lot of ulcerative tissue. And originally when they saw it, they said the ulcerative tissue in his bowel is so extreme that we worry that it would perforate, because if it perforated, he would need emergency surgery. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit of a strange one, because although I didn't ever think that I had like a super healthy digestive system, compared to a lot of people, it still wasn't actually that bad. It was just I always felt aware of it. And over the course of a few months, things kind of got better and got better. And I got back to the point where I described myself as normal. So everything was normal. I wasn't taking medication. I hadn't had surgery. It was like I went into a really deep trough and then came back out and just carried on. And that happened for 9 months. And the same thing happened again. And for a long time after that, I thought I had recovered. I thought everything was fine. Again, I had no ongoing medication. I didn't require surgery at the time. And then about 18 months ago, I went in for something different. I went to see my doctor about, I'd had a random swelling on my knee, which I wondered if I had done something in the gym. It was very out of character for me. I never got knee pain, even with kind of intense training. And it was a new doctor. They said, "You haven't been in here for 5 years." And I was like, "Sure, like, why would I?" And they said, "We just, because you haven't been in, we should send you in for scans and stuff because you haven't had anything done diagnostically for a while." And they took my inflammatory marker, something called my CRP or C-reactive protein. And they said, ideally, it should be under 8. Mine at the highest was 136, I think, or something like that, which is not good. That's suboptimal. And they tested,
it was 18, would not 18 recommend.
Times. Yeah, it should be. Yeah, I remember his face as well. He's like, yeah, anything above 8, we would worry. So what's my 136? I was like, it's quite a lot above 8. The funny thing is, on like my chart, if I looked online, where it has the safe marker where we want your level below, because mine have been so high for so long, the reference level isn't visible. It's like shifted the axis to the map so much. And like all my dots are up here. And I was like, where's the reference? I was like, it's right down there that you can't even see. So yeah, they put me on medication, which I was very nervous about, if I'm honest. It's a strong medication. It comes with some possible quite hefty side effects in a subset of people. And it really changed the way I felt within 24 hours. Oh. To the point that when I spoke to the doctor, I was like, this can't, like, as I understand the power of placebo effect, so I'm not writing that off, but my stomach hasn't felt like this in years. And he said it's really, he said it's a surprisingly common review. So it had shifted what I thought being healthy was. Because for a long time, I thought I was okay until I started taking this. And I was like, I really wasn't. And he said, yeah, like you were trying to reassure us that you were fine. And we looked at your stomach or your bowels. And they're like, you were not fine.
I feel like that's so common that people just kind of live with, well, this is what it feels like. This is life. And you just go along without really knowing what's possible.
I think especially with like a slow transition, it's one of those. This
very
is
gradual.
I'm,
it's like the, what's the analogy? Frog and water,
the
boiling
frog in
water.
Hot water. If you put it in cold water and turn it up, it doesn't realize it's hot versus putting it in hot water.
Until it boils to death.
Yeah.
Just chilling.
Yeah, so I thought I was fine, and I lived like that for years and years and years. I say fine. I wouldn't have said super healthy.
Yeah.
But yeah, my doctor gave me a slap in the face with a reality check. It was really painful.
I think that we were talking earlier, just people in athletics, people in fitness. I mean, a lot of people, we're just like master compensators, and we just learn one thing. And if it gets us the end result that looks good, or in the short term, if it gets us that quick fix, I mean, again, that's what sells. That's what we're going to go for. And I mean, I talk about when I was an athlete, how we're so many of us are basically just functional binge purgers, because we make all these excuses to consume like 4,000 or 5,000 calories in one sitting. I mean, I can't
justify it.
I can't count weekly the amount of times I would sit down at a meal and eat more calories than I should have had in multiple days. And I'm like, yeah, that's binging purging by definition, and I can't even get out of it. And that doesn't even count the drinking I did on weekends. So it's just like, we have some really messed up views as to what it means to be athletic. It's what it means to be healthy. It's what it looks to be healthy, just based on when I know me and all my friends, and we thought that we were healthy football athletes and what we actually did. And I think the toughest thing, again, is the education and being online in the online space. You two are both master educators preaching this other message that we're kind of talking about, like, how do you do it online? How do you reach people with education so beautifully?
So it's a skill, you know, and it's something that we both had to learn over time. And I feel like, especially in recent years, I've gotten a lot better at it. But you, I mean, the beginning of when I was on social media, I wasn't really educating as much. It was more a lot of just sharing my own personal journey and being like, here's my workout. Here's what I'm eating. Here's what I'm doing today. And I think that's what a lot of people, that's how a lot of people started out. And I kind of fell into this by accident. You know, this was never my plan. Well, not that I really had a life plan, but I didn't know, you know, going into college, for example, I was pre-med. I thought I was going to be a doctor. I didn't think I would end up doing online stuff, being an entrepreneur. I didn't even know being an entrepreneur was an option. But now I realized, over the years, I realized how much I love teaching, how much I love, and I think this is maybe my love language of words of affirmation coming through. I love getting testimonials from, you changed my life in these years. I'm like, oh my God, I love you. And it just made me feel so damn good. I'm like, I want to do more of this. I want to help more people and more people. And so I just kept moving in that direction. And then I would pay attention, obviously, to, and I'm sure you guys do too, to what other people are doing similar things to you. Like, how are they communicating? How are they getting their message across? I'd pay attention to what kinds of posts of mine would do well. And I try to figure out, okay, what is it about it that they liked? Let's try to decipher that. Was it my humor? Was it the meme format? Was it the sound, the song, whatever? And then you just kind of drift more in whatever direction that is over time. And then for me too, this year in particular, and I lose sight of this when I get excited or very worked up, is trying to be a lot more clear, articulate, and slowing down my cadence of speech when I talk to try and be more effective.
Yeah.
In getting my message across, because, you know, obviously if you're talking too fast or whatever, you lose people because then they're focused on trying to keep up with what you're saying rather than actually absorbing your message. So things like that, I've been more intentional about that recently, about how can I be a better, effective, more effective communicator, more effective educator. And then now lately on Instagram, of course, the Reels are doing really well. And that's been fun for me to kind of experiment and play around with. So I've been doing more of those.
I feel like I learned maybe two most important lessons. Number one, everyone, the deeper rooted a belief someone has, the harder it will be to convince them otherwise. And I think it is very good to acknowledge why they believe that in the first place. If I came along and said, that's bullshit, someone will get really, they'll have a kind of emotional reaction to that. If I came along and said, this is why some people might believe this, and I kind of show the arguments for, and then I come in with the arguments against, I think people maybe feel a bit less challenged. And the second thing is, I remind myself that everyone at some point thinks they know a topic well when they don't. So there are many, 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 many topics where a true expert could come along and really humble me by making me realize I have no idea what I'm talking about on that topic. And, you know, people at that point with at least one topic in their life at all times. And there are a lot of topics I talk about now where I felt like that in the past. I was very confident in things that I have since changed my mind on. And it wasn't the people that mocked or were super aggressive that ever convinced me otherwise. It was seeing really compelling arguments where I thought, that should make a really good point. So I remember reading an article on why people cut more foods out of their diet than they should, and the kind of the damaging side, the kind of orthorexia tendency in the fitness industry where people are super strict about food selection. And I remember reading it and thinking, that's me. And it was never the shouty argument that got to me. So I try and acknowledge that if people believe something that's different to me, I try and acknowledge why rather than making them feel stupid. And occasionally I'm a bit patronizing, but I try and do it in a,
but because you have an English accent, yeah, everyone thinks it's funny. That's what, yeah. I can't get away with that.
Yeah. If there's something that I think is quite an extreme topic that's easy to dispel the myth on, or something that I think is maybe a little bit, maybe warrants less discussion, I might be a bit more ruthless. But on something like, I think there are a lot of topics where people come in and say, that's a myth, where I think if you had actually explained why people believe it in the first place, those people would at least feel heard, if that makes sense. So like say a really common topic is fasted cardio better than non-fasted cardio? Loads of people come in and go, fasted cardio is a myth. I was like, the people that actually want to do fasted cardio, you haven't changed anyone's mind there. if you came in and said, here is why faster cardio might be better, or here is why what the research said that made people believe that. However, newer research has maybe shown this. I think people are like, oh, and it maybe feels less challenging.
Meet people where they're at. That's what I always say. And I've gotten pushback too from physical therapists where I'm trying to meet people where they're at. Like, listen, I know that they're going to want to get this manipulation. It's going to feel dang good. But if they actually then continue to look into what I'm saying about it, you know, this, I'm not saying like, it's not going to damage you. You want to get the manipulation, get the manipulation, but there's probably a better way long-term that can actually help your pain. And so I love that idea of meeting people where they're at and then educating past that. And I think that you guys do a great job in really what is true currently and what will truly help you into your body. Like the real things, not just what do I need to take away? What do I need to not do anymore? You present it so well in terms of like, listen, this is not true anymore. This is why. Here's the research. And then here's what you can actually do that supports your mental health as you're on this health journey. Because as we all know, it's a freaking journey, right?
I think the other thing that you said that's really pertinent is I will say, based on the research we have now, I will often say in the future, I might change my mind on that. Like there are loads of topics where there isn't actually a huge amount of research. There's maybe enough to dispel some beliefs that people have, but I think coming at it with an open mind, like, well, here's what the research says, maybe it'll change, but I think that's kind of more open-minded than saying what you believe is wrong.
Totally.
I think that is
And also saying, to my knowledge, I'm not aware of any research that says that, but here's what I know, something like that.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Being open to asking a question first, being open to saying, like, oh, I haven't heard that. I'd love to look into that. I feel like so many people, like you said, will get defensive so quickly if it's not something they've heard, if it directly contradicts one of their core beliefs in a certain area. I mean, we're all so egotistical about, like, again, our own thing. And we've had this theme coming up about research or diving into research. And if people are open about the discussion, or if people are saying like, oh, well, it depends on this, this, and this, then that might be a safe conversation to have. If it's people who are saying like, no, fasted cardio is stupid, then I'll say, well, like, no, there's probably a percentage of people that are doing it for a certain reason. And if we can talk into those reasons, then we're going to be so much more successful as a whole, as a collective, you know, learning more about why people do things a certain way and how we can do it for the right reasons.
Yeah. Now, if people do want to go see what you guys are talking about on social media and how you're doing it, where could they find you? And beyond social media, what are you guys like kind of up to? Where should people go?
Okay. I'm very easy to find. My brand name is SoheFit across all my platforms. You can Google my name as well, Sohee Lee, or you can go to SoheFit.com. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and now TikTok too, and YouTube as well. Everything is SoheFit.
My Facebook page is Ben Carpenter Personal Training, and I think my YouTube is Ben Carpenter. My Instagram page is BDC Carpenter, because I couldn't be Ben Carpenter. And that's because my middle names are Benjamin David Cocaine Carpenter. My username is actually BDC Carpenter.
And we are verifying right now. I can't see the whole passport, so I can't verify if this entire thing is real. Oh, there it is. Yep, it's valid. It's valid.
Benjamin David Cocaine Carpenter, BDC Carpenter. Which was convenient, but it means that every time I explain it, I have to spell it out twice, because people are like, one C or two Cs?
BDC.
That's where to find me.
That's so funny. Well, I mean, we're going to have all of that linked up, obviously, in the show notes, so you guys can go find them. And obviously, if you find Sohee, you could probably find Ben on that page as well.
Hopefully, one of the last two or three posts, because you post me so much. No pressure.
I do, though.
And you guys, well, Sohee, you have your programs that people can look into, and really what you guys are doing, what myths that you're going over, what things that you guys have been talking about, and I'm sure that we'll have you back.
Yeah, we talked through so much that we're going to need to dive deeper on some of this, but a few of the main messages, just that there is no one fix, a lot of the things we talked through, and just needing to explore and being open to new things, so we'll definitely have to have you guys back again.
Look forward to it. Thank you very much.
And there we have it, yet another amazing guest on the Optimal Body Podcast. So now what we ask of you, if you loved any bit of that or resonated with it, go share it out, share it with a friend, share it on your social media, because you know there are more people out there that would resonate with it just the same. Also, subscribe, rate, review on your favorite podcast app so we know what you want to learn or other guests that you think we should bring on for you in the future. Keep tuning in to find your optimal body.